Hi, and welcome to episode 62 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars and Stalkerville, and joining me this week to talk about comics till we turn as blue as Hank McCoy, writer, artist, and creator of the ongoing superhero webcomic Vanguard, Mr. Daniel Butcher.
Hello.
And our very own superstar DJ is Tony Esmond.
Hello, you alright?
Yes.
All good, yeah, you good?
Yes. How are you, Tony? I'm refusing to be put off by you this week.
Yeah. You were doing that. Shush, I'm preparing. You were doing that again, weren't you, earlier?
Doing the scales. Getting warm with the voice up.
Look, don't join in with him, Dan. Look, you're better than that. Out,
he never records with a loaded gun as well, is a little secret of his.
Pardon? Jesus. It's been a busy old past couple of weeks for comics. Obviously last week we recorded early, so our minds were all over the place, but we're back on track this week, aren't we?
We are, yes. And apologies, there wasn't a Melksham special as well.
Yes, we were having
mostly because of a really annoying bloke who kept walking around with a microphone doing a sort of running commentary of what was going on.
Yeah, Melksham Comic-Con was great fun, but on the first day there was a guy on the tannoy who drove a lot of people to distraction at the beginning. It lessened, and on the second day, he wasn't there.
So, was he not there at all on the second day?
No, the second day the tannoy was used for just announcing panels and, you know, if someone's lost a wallet or something like that. Yeah.
Overly used, would you say?
Didn't Jenny Gilblad go tell him off or something? Who was he going and told him off? Someone, wasn't it?
Jenny on Twitter.
Jenny Risa, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes, it was a Melksham Comic Con was a good laugh, great day. A lot of people from further afield came down for the weekend. That was a good laugh. I hung out with Sean Dobie all day, who seems to be he's getting called Sean Dobes all the time now.
Which he likes that, doesn't he?
Well, it's not actually his name. His name's Sean.
We got that from this show, didn't they? I presume.
Probably. A lot of people get things from this show, Dan. You know. Yep. whether it be information,
herpes.
cut me off.
Tom Ward was at the show, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He posted out something on Twitter of like a cat running around his kitchen, and he said, "I've been chasing this strange cat around my kitchen like some kind of fucking cartoon. It'd kill me."
what's that got to do with?
I had to put it in there. Absolutely tickled me.
Okay,
but. Yeah, nice work, Tom.
Tom Ward, please. Yeah, Tom Ward was also at Melksham, and it was cracking. Yeah, my second appearance on the Just a Minute panel wasn't a complete disaster.
Yeah, I left after a minute and pretended to be on the phone of someone.
See, folks, he doesn't support me in real life either.
Someone talked
so what's
about
the Just a Minute?
Bag and I had to leave.
Have you heard of the radio show Just a Minute?
No.
Right.
I watch TV, I don't listen to radio.
Oh, here we go.
He just listens to playlists on Spotify because he's cool.
You're one of those trendy hits.
I haven't paid for Spotify, I have to wait for the fucking adverts every three songs.
So. Admit it, Dan. Tell us the truth. You're a millennial.
You hate that phrase as well.
Yes, so Melksham was a great success and a good laugh, but Tony was also, this very day, in fact, he was out and about. Where were you, Tony?
Yeah, I went to Nice. Can I just quickly tell the Jen Gilblad story, where I went up to see Jen, past guest, very good guest, one of our favourite guests, actually. Mm. I know we're ignoring the current guest, but he's sitting there quietly. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Jen... I went up and said, "Oh, how are you doing?" She said, "Yeah, I'm fine." Like, she didn't recognise me. Do you know what I mean? She's not hard to miss because she had a crow on her head, and literally did, didn't she?
Yes.
Yeah. And she said, I said, "Well, we've met before. Did you come on the podcast?" She went, "Yes," because she's Swedish. That's my Swedish person impression. She went, "Yes."
Do it again.
Yes, like that. good. Yeah, thanks. She said, "Same face. She says, same face. Different hair. You had black hair tied back in a ponytail, didn't you?" And I went, "No, I've always had this hair colour. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I've always had this one." And she goes, No. Black hair. Same face, black hair." And at which point, Dobes elbowed me and went, "She thinks you're Steven Seagal."
It's never not funny.
For those that don't know, my Twitter picture is a picture of Steven Seagal because I find it amusing and I'm a big fan of his. And maybe they don't have Steven Seagal in Sweden. Maybe it doesn't translate.
Think Steven Seagal, everyone in the world, it's not like they just block people out from different countries, Tony. I think they don't have Steven Seagal.
My theory, Jenny Gilblad is not from Sweden, because I asked her about Stockholm. I said, I've been to Stockholm recently, and she said, no, I've never been there. No, this is the capital city, and she says, oh, I live far up in the north, which proves my theory that Jenny Gilblad is, in fact, an alien, which her husband just sort of smiled at me and nodded. So I think that's confirmed.
Yes, the husband. Yeah.
It's kind of, she's left a clue right there, the beard.
Yeah.
He's her cover.
He is, isn't he?
He won't deny it if you ask him as well. Now, before we talk about Nice, he's sitting there so patient, we might as well introduce our guest so he can get stuck in as well. I'm sure when we're talking about Steven Seagal, he's got so much he wants to say. So,
I was just thinking, I don't think I've ever seen a Steven Seagal movie.
I'm going to turn.
Right, we're going to cut you off now.
Under Siege?
No.
No? Oh, okay.
No.
Oh. If you haven't seen that, I can't think of another one.
I genuinely can't think of one I've seen.
What about Machete?
Oh, I've seen Machete.
He's a villain in Machete.
Ah, right, okay then.
There you go. That's made your day, isn't it? That's made your day, mate. That's
all
right now.
Yeah, I love Machete.
The man that loves Machete is this week's guest. This week we're joined by a writer whose credits include exciting titles like DIS and Future Primitive. His new book, Planet of Demons, looks to be another winner. And we all liked it on this show. We'll go talk about that soon. Mm. It's our pleasure to welcome Kevin Gunstone to the show.
Hello.
Hey. Hello,
Kevin.
Hello. It's nice to be here.
And we just got to say, you have the coolest second name in history.
You do. Yeah, we're talking about this earlier.
Thank you. Yeah. I've never been that keen on it, so it's nice to hear that.
You've never been that keen on it? If I had that name.
No, not at all.
Do you feel the pressure to be like some sort of gun-toting vigilante hell-bent on avenging? No.
Not too often.
Brighton could do with a couple, couldn't they?
Occasionally. Perhaps on a Tuesday or something like that.
Yeah.
Tuesday Vigilante Day in Brighton. Lovely.
Yeah.
So, welcome to the show, Kevin. It's going to be...
Hello. It's good to be here. Thanks.
Yes. Even though you haven't watched Steven Seagal, Tony's still going to talk to you, we promise.
No, he hasn't seen him in Machete, although he's a villain in that, which naturally can never be.
No, what do you mean? I think he could play a good villain.
He's not really got the acting chops, has he?
Oh dear. I'm not going to take that. I'm not going to take that any further. But back to Nice, Tony. How was that today?
Yeah, I went. It was actually better because I think we were on the. I talked about it last year, didn't I? When I went to it, and it was in a tent in the rugby club, and it wasn't that good last year. This year, back to the normal venue, and it was actually pretty good. And I was standing in the queue. And a guy came along and said, are you buying tickets here or you got prepaid ones? I said, I'm going to buy one. And the guy in front of me turned around and said, here, I've got a spare one, have it. And it was Gary.
Oh, brilliant. Wilson.
Yeah, top bloke, Gary. And it turned out he is the editor, blogger and self-confessed geek for comicsanonymous.co.uk on Twitter, comicsanonblog. And he's a comic reviewer. And we talked about for about the next hour and wandered around the convention together. And really kind of him. I bought him Bubbles 07. He liked that. And all round good egg.
That's a top website as well in terms of like comic reviewers and stuff. Comics Anonymous.
Yeah. And he's a busy guy. And he got an excellent Steve Dillon sketch, which I've just seen him post. So very good. Yeah. So big shout out to him. Generally, the day was good actually. I had the piss taken out of me again by Duncan Vigredo, which is always pleasant. He's a top bloke actually. Really good guy. Yeah, big fan of his stuff. Sidesy was there. Sidesy and Chris Travell. Chris and I obviously share common interest in pursuing a male modelling career, so that was quite nice to chat to him.
How's that going?
Going all right, actually. Yeah, it's going quite well, thanks for asking. Yeah.
Which modelling magazines are you in this month? Airfix?
Razzle Reader's Husbands.
Lovely. Isn't that called Frazzles?
Well, I've been out in the sun, I couldn't really help it.
it's already going badly.
And very quick shout out, yesterday I met up with Christian Wild Goose Gus and Mark Lamming. Both have got comics out this week. So go buy Gotham Academy Annual, that's by Chris, and Hyperion, issue 6 by Mark. Both really good. Very good. there you go.
Hyperion's a character that I don't really know anything about either. So
We've never really sort of appeared that widely, did he? You know, been in the odd Avengers issue and stuff like that. And then they did that Supreme Power, was it called? I'm trying to think, the J. Michael Straczynski thing.
Yeah.
And he was in that. And then, now he's been in the Avengers now and everything.
Yeah,
so quite
Hickman brought him into the 616, didn't he? Like, proper.
Yeah.
Is it Hickman? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I really like that Supreme
thing.
There's
all that miniseries in the 80s, wasn't it? Squadron Supreme.
Yeah, which is famous for having the original run of Trades contains Mark Grimwald's ashes, doesn't it? Is the allegedly the story.
Yeah, that's right.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird.
They put them into the ink. Yeah. It's a little bit dark, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess he asked for that.
I think so. Yeah, I don't think it's sort of a random one.
I hope so. Just left his urn on the side and got knocked in.
It was a bit like, was it Kiss who had their blood in one of their comics?
Yeah,
that's
right, with the Super Special.
Yeah.
That's it, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking if we ever do a comic, what kind of bodily fluid we could put into it as a group. Probably just our tears.
Yeah. Yes, tears. That's what it's going to be.
Yeah, like in Twins with the milkshake thing. Get that reference?
Are you saying if we put all our DNA together, we could create an Arnold Schwarzenegger-like perfect man?
Danny DeVito.
It's going to be the Danny DeVito.
Well, Danny DeVito would be the Arnie character, and then we'd have to get some kind of...
What's the name of Danny DeVito's character in that film?
I don't know, is she? I've seen it.
Julius is Arnie's.
Yeah. Vince.
I don't know. Vince.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
All right. You keep telling people are your dad as well. Every time I say something about someone, you go, he's my dad. That was like your joke today. You told me Keith Vaz was your dad.
Yeah.
There must have been an unpleasant morning in the Vaz household today. Yeah.
To be fair, though, it does explain a lot with Vince's behaviour.
Oh, butcher.
And you tried to convince me that Kipper the dog was a member of UKIP the other day. That's not true.
I used the term UKIPper. That's... Oh, God. This show has never been so political. So, with that in mind, let's talk about some comics, shall we?
Yes.
Let's get this train back on the tracks. Tony, what would you like to talk about this week?
Yes, I got sent. I think, have you looked in the Dropbox for this? Because we all got sent it. Untitled Apes: Epic Adventure by Steve Tillotson. Have you seen the preview for this, guys? Have you?
No, I didn't see this.
I haven't looked at it yet.
Oh, so good. It's it's in the Avery Hill Dropbox because they share previews with us, don't they? You know, and I think there's the first 22 pages we got sent through. Here's the story. This is the little blurb on it. On this particular morning in this particular place, Untitled Ape, brackets, a giant purple ghost beast, has decided he needs to see his family. His friend, a cat, brackets, a cat, doesn't think it's a particularly good idea, but at this very moment, a massive storm rolls in and their epic adventure begins. Without a map or much of a plan, they journey through flooded cities and stormy seas, across frozen plains and snowy mountains, and even up into the world of the clouds on their quest to find Ape's home in the jungle. Along their way, they make the acquaintance of a cast of incredible characters who both help and hinder them in equal degree. Meanwhile, and elsewhere, Ape's past is starting to catch up with him, and it becomes more and more difficult to keep his dark past from Cat, brackets, a cat. Which is... Now, we last reviewed stuff by Steve when he was part of Cumberly Boys and... What was it? Cumberly Girls and Manly Boys, was it?
Yeah, it was the annual... it was those. I've forgotten the name escapes me now. But I absolutely love those books.
It's sort of silly piss take on, you know, 50s and 60s boys and girls comics. You know, really good stuff. This is... I'm going to describe it as complete and utter strangeness, I think, is probably the best way. Both the comics to talk about this week probably enjoyed more with a big dose of LSD, to be fair.
I like the sound of it already.
Yeah, see, I was going to say, not that that makes it a bad thing, Kev. I've got to tell you, mate, yeah. Don't do drugs. All drugs are wrong. There are other drugs available. I've got to tell you, the art could come from any decade. It's got a real illustrative... but painted, all the colour looks watercolour painted, you know. Really, really interesting freshness around the shapes of the characters and the way Steve plays with them. I love Steve's work. Cards on the Table, Steve and I were table mates in the early 2000s, and I got a couple of original pieces, Onion Peter and Garlic Tony being a couple of my favourites, sort of thing.
Garlic Tony.
Yeah, it's just a bit. He's got a head of garlic, and he sort of stinks a bit.
I'm saying nothing.
If you went to a convention and you saw this on a table, you would pick it up. It's done in landscape, so the panels sort of come across the page in big sort of sprawling landscape, and you know, and a landscape in itself as well. So you see across the trees and mountains and across snowy fields and all that sort of thing. Beautiful stuff. But it is completely fucking bonkers, I've got to tell you. It reminds me of an almost sort of trippy, subversive Rupert the Bear annual. If you see what I'm saying. But really rich in colour. It's got a sort of otherworldly nature to the way he writes stuff as well. Sometimes it's there's lines in it, like anyone that, like the cat says to him, anyway, do me a favour and help me get my fags out of this tree, will you? And this sort of weird, it's not even ape, I don't know why he says it's an untitled ape, it just looks like this sort of skull attached to this sort of big hefty body. And it, so it's got this sort of weird conversations that happen throughout it, and they sort of a bit like a movie. Like, have you ever seen Oh Lucky Man? Malcolm McDowell.
No.
Anyone seen that? And it's one of those sort of journey books that it's like a softer version of Natural Born Killers, where they just sort of fall into different adventures, you know, and across different sort of genres and different landscapes, and they sort of find their way across things, all for this sort of slightly made up reason that the ape has decided he wants to go home. Although he does start the story as a ghost, so it's all a bit unclear as to what he actually is.
Yeah.
Steve sort of splits, uses a really interesting grid pattern where he will actually split a picture up into grids, but if you follow it through the picture, it's actually the same picture split up. And then sort of creatures climb up and down things, and they row across the page, and he switches the camera view to above. And he uses a strange sort of lettering, a sort of slightly haphazard, but in a good way, a sort of strange sort of haphazard lettering that sometimes like splays into the sides of the thought bubbles and word balloons.
Mm-hmm.
But it is done with a purpose. Really interesting. Probably the best thing I think I've seen Steve do. Hopefully we'll get him on the show soon for a chat. But I've only seen the first 20-odd pages. It's going to be 132 pages. It's going to be $12.99 landscape. Which is a great value for that sort of type book. And if he gets the right reception to it, he's probably going to do a sequel, he tells me. It's going to be released at Thought Bubble the weekend of the 4th to the 6th of November this year. And I'm hoping we'll get to see a full version of it sometime around that time. If you want to pre-order, which I think you can do, go to averyhillpublishing.bigcartel.com or follow them on Twitter at Avery Hill, then PUBL, Avery Hill Publer. And then if you want to see some more examples of Steve's work, because he's done stuff for donkey's years, Steve. He's never one of these blokes you see in the small press circuit who just goes around shouting about how brilliant they are all the time. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
But he's been a fairly big constant. I know he's written some of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics, kids comics and stuff like that. Really, really funny. He's got a really individual style and a really sort of individual sense of humour that will, in equal ways, completely fucking puzzle you. You know, at points you think, what? I don't know what's going on here, but I love it. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like that. And it puts a smile on your face with it as well. Go to Banal, B-A-N-A-L Pig, banalpig.com, or follow him at Banal Pig. He also has the sad reputation of being the first person ever to publish anything I drew, which will hopefully I've bought all the copies of and they will never see light again. But yeah, he's a good egg. And this is really, really, really good. I think this is will be the book this year that will make Avery Hill stand out again, I think. Right. We've had a couple of months off from them. I haven't seen anything by them, I think, for a couple of months now at least, which is very unlike them. They're normally, you know, not this quiet. And they've
well, they had the big sort of summer sort of releases, didn't they, with the new Rachel Smith book.
Free comic book day, didn't they? They had the big free book day push. And then they've sort of sat back and these are being created. And there's a couple more other books which they've sent us previews of, which I'm sure we'll talk about sometime soon. But yeah, this is definitely one to get hold of when it comes through. Untitled Apes Epic Adventure by Steve.
With Avery Hill, when they're kind of putting stuff out, you know it's great, good stuff all the time.
You do.
I mean, it's absolutely on the money all the time.
Yeah.
So I'm quite happy to kind of have kind of like not as many books, but the quality be absolutely up
if they
there.
Put one book out a year, I'd still buy it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they put 20 books out, I'm gonna look at and buy nearly all of them. Yeah, definitely. really good. So have you come across them, Kev? Have you met them?
Not too much. No, a lot of my reading is still very much based around kind of like more European publishers than American, to be perfectly honest with you.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're part of they're partnered up with Retrofit as well, who deal with Box Brown and a couple of other people. So they've got I think they stock you can buy them over in the States as well. But yeah, worth looking out for, definitely. There you go.
Yeah. No. Well, I'm going to Thought Bubble this year for the first time, I'll make sure to look for it there.
Yeah, they're always residents there. There was a big table and presence there. Yeah, definitely. Nice one. All right, guys, nice. That's my one. There you go. Nice one.
Daniel, what have you got this week?
This one's a gem. I've been hanging on to it for a couple of weeks, but I kind of worked my way through it. Mm. I think I might have sent it on to you guys before, but it's Scurry by Mac Smith, and you can read it at scurrycomic.com. And when you fire this web comic up, it's just an absolute art beast. It's really fantastic. And I sort of took a bit of a gut punch when I read on later about the artist and how he does his stuff. And he knocks two of these pages out a week. And they're fully painted. It's really good. It kind of, the art style is reminiscent of when you watch kind of like an animated film. If you look at any look at the extras and you see that someone's done like full color storyboards for them.
Right, okay.
The quality is fantastic.
I must say, I've just looked at based on scurrycomic.com, and this is ridiculously good stuff, Dan, so I'm just going to let you go.
it's really, like, the art is fantastic. But, it started updating this year in January, so it's relatively new. But I can easily see this as being one of the better webcomics of the year. Rising to the ranks of like being in a top 10. It depends if the guy sticks with it and keeps doing it, because I think sometimes people start doing these comics and they actually get so many good offers that they're ridiculous, not stupid not to take it, really.
Yeah,
and they go off into other stuff, but for the moment it's really good. The Scurry is about a colony of mice struggling to survive a long and unnatural winter. Humanity is gone and the sun is rarely seen. And within the abandoned houses where the mice nest are now barren and falling apart. Food has become scarce, and as resources run thin, and with many mice falling ill, the mice scavenger teams are forced to search further and further from their home. This brings with it extreme peril, as feral cats and other animals relentlessly hunt for prey. But the scavengers must find food that help the colony survive another day. But on the horizon, larger events loom that no mere mouse can fully comprehend. Adding to this, inner political conflict threatens to tear the mice nest apart as some realize that the old world is gone and they must adapt to the new one before it's too late. The story doesn't lay it out too much for you, but something's happened to humanity. There's no humans anymore. It could be, I'm not sure if it's kind of a nuclear thing with the sun kind of being rarely seen, but all the kind of, when they there's a fantastic shot I'll post up on Facebook of when the two mice characters go into like a ruined house, and the detail is fantastic. Like the kitchen is just an absolute mess, and the animals and characters are kind of drawn and invested with so much character and characterization. It's really nice. The comic addresses themes of change and independence and adapting from what once was like an old life into a new life, and this kind of the comic deals with, as in these characters essentially locked in a battle for survival, and there's like an old core of the mice nest wanting to kind of see things out and see where it goes, and there's a newer lot that's basically saying, well, things are changing and we got to react, otherwise we're going to be finished. And that plot line's still playing out. It's only issue and a half, or into his second issue, so there's a lot to go through. I've read a couple of interviews with the guy, Max Smith, who writes and draws it, and he cites films such as The Secret of Nim and The Dark Crystal as being big influences. And you can definitely see that throughout the comic.
Yeah, you can, can't you?
Yeah.
I see there's a Kickstarter as well, Vince. Dan, sorry.
I think he kickstarted book one.
Yeah.
Or book
he's
two.
I'm just looking at it now. He smashed it because he had an eight grand goal and he's hit. Well, almost 36 grand.
Yeah, dollars. There you go.
Yeah. Good. And he's still got 30 days to go.
Yeah.
Really? So, it's available now, is it?
Yeah. If you want that first book, the Kickstarter, that's up and going. Mm. Also, to give him a shout out on his Patreon account, which is, he runs tutorials, you got downloadable files, videos, tons of stuff on there, and it's for $2 a month. You can get access to all of that. So I'd really recommend doing it. I've looked at a couple of things on there, and they're really good. If any kind of aspiring artist, sometimes you can kind of look at the way someone's worked a file or a bit of video, and it'll kind of trigger off a little, oh, I could do that and add it into my kind of repertoire of techniques. So it is really worth checking out. And the comic itself is fantastic and really real good read. Usually if I can kind of get a couple pages in, it kind of sucks you in, pulls you in.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Sounds like there's, I mean, the artwork is spectacular, but it sounds like there's a lot more going on. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, it's not a simple, it's not a simple story. No. You know what I mean? It's not like kind of a happy-go-lucky mouse story. Yeah. They talk to each other and, air of menace that kind of pervades the whole story and the tone throughout.
Yeah,
but I really enjoyed it. I've read it a couple of times, and I would heartily recommend you go check it out at www.scurrycomic.com.
Hey,
nice. I think I'm going to check this out as soon as we finish talking. No, I won't. I'll be editing this episode, so I'll have to wait until afterwards. Thank you very much, Dan. My book for this week was one I actually got from Melksham, actually, from Kel Windsor. He's one of the guys from the GBs. Does the artwork on the GBs, and he's got a one-shot comic called Desperate Times that I grabbed off him. Now, Cal is an artist, a comic artist and illustrator who's been around for quite a few years, but he's also an art teacher, and he's just started, last year he started an MA in illustration, like book illustration and things like this. And he was telling me this book was one of his sort of projects that he had, and where they got a famous fairy tale and everyone got like a segment of it. They had to tell it from a different sort of style. Now, it was the Hansel and Gretel story, and he was given the Wicked Stepmother story. Now, I didn't know this, but after, we all know Hansel and Gretel, they go into the woods, witch, blah, 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 blah. Their woodchopper father turns up and they go home safe, blah. I didn't realise that when they get home, the Wicked Stepmother is sort of not to be seen. She's gone, and it doesn't really say what it is. So it gave him a chance to look at that story and what actually happened to her. But what he's done here, he's taken this story and put it in a modern day setting, like an English setting with like food banks and, you know, Desperate Times is the title, and it is a story of this nasty person on the edge, you know, who doesn't have anything. There's like the happy father who loves his kids, and she's just annoyed by everything. She goes out walking in the rain, and she's just saying shit constantly. You know, she's not nice to anyone. And how that story of when she packages the kids up, she basically tries to sell them off. I mean, it's a famous fairy tale, you know.
That's sad.
Yeah, it is awful. And you do see what happens to her. No spoilers, but it is satisfying. And so it's just one and done comic. But I was really, really impressed with this. I've seen Kel's work about, and you know, I love his stuff. It's very sort of usually quite ink heavy and like watercolors and washes and stuff like this. But this one was a cleaner, just straight up solid inks. It's a sort of a two tone book as well. It's sort of black and blue. But he also hand letters all the sort of speech bubbles and stuff, and the speech bubbles have a sort of pinkish hue, which is different. And it gives it a real sort of nice effect. And you do, in the first few pages, that with the food banks, and he lets the panels do the talking. You know, like you see this woman just walking along, and you see where she's walking, and it starts raining, and she's going on this huge journey to a food bank. And the people in the food bank are nice to her, but she tries taking too much. You know, she just absolutely loads up her box, but that she can't take enough. You know, well, she can't take that much. And when they tell her that, she just loses her shit and smashes everything. So she's not a very nice person. But in that scene especially, when there's one of the guys at the food bank that just says, "You've taken too much," Kel takes two pages to break that down. And sort of, you can almost see it cinematically. It's sort of slow motion, this guy saying, "You've taken too much." And there's just a splash page of this woman's face. And she's a hit. You can, if you wanted an example of looking at a panel of a person and you know exactly how nasty that person is, the splash page of this woman's face and her reaction does it all. You know, you can do a lot without any words, with just a look, and Kel does that brilliantly. just wonderful stuff. There's great sort of lettering all the way through. He uses some lettering of sound effects and puts sort of scenes within that lettering. Like when people slam doors, you can within the word slam, you can see people reacting to the noise. You know, there's lots of great stuff going on in this.
Okay.
And like I said, it's one and done. You can pick it up. You know exactly what you're getting. It was a nice modern tale. I don't always gel well with modern retellings of classic fairy tales. You know, I prefer the old school stuff myself. But this one really
Avengers
got me.
Grimm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You love the Avengers Grimm. Let's not start talking about those Asylum films. We'll be here all night. It is gruesome. I wouldn't say it's an all ages book. You know, there's a bit of swearing in it, and the end is quite gory, shall we say, and quite graphic. But in a wonderful kind
of
way.
We like that.
Yeah, we do like that. We like that when it's done well and it's done effectively.
Yeah.
Does it address anything about the father sort of really loving his kids and then next minute he's putting them out?
Yeah.
Freeze.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it is literally, she does this and the father doesn't know about it. So he basically comes back, he goes, where are my kids? You know, where are they? And you can tell how that conversation ends.
Because obviously in the original story, he does it on her behest, which obviously is a lot darker.
Yeah.
If it's kind of easy to
she basically goes behind his back. Yeah, there's a twist on that. She goes behind his back and it doesn't end too well for her. She is basically like a nasty person on the edge. You know, she wants more. She just wants to get out of this life that she's gotten into and chooses an extreme way to do it. We've all been there. But we shouldn't sell children.
I haven't.
Yeah, so this, you know, great. It's a great tale. You can follow Kel at kelwindsor.com, and you can contact him, Kel at kelwindsor.com, because he's always up for commissions and stuff like that. And he does it through Beardy Boy Comics, so if you search for him on Twitter. Yeah, because Kel does have a rather resplendent
beard.
Okay. He is a man of beard.
Beards are cool now, aren't they, apparently?
They are cool, yeah. He'll probably say that he had one before it was cool. But
yeah,
who
that's
knows?
What they all say. Yeah. They all say that.
Oh, well, I had a beard before it was cool, didn't you, Tony?
No, I've seen a picture of you without a beard.
Where?
You've deleted it now, but it was on your Instagram.
Yeah. I'm not putting that Instagram account out for everyone to follow. Although now you just see pictures of cats.
You do. What, are you and cats, really?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
So Desperate Times by Kel Windsor. If you see it at a show, he's from Norwich. I think he's going to be at Nottingham this year. He does Nottingham every year. It's very worth picking up. And it was nice that he did this course and he chose, you know, it was like the perfect opportunity to do something he loved and actually produce an actual sort of finished book. And I love the sort of use of, he's got like a matte sort of cover to it. It's not all shiny and glossy. It perfectly sums up what the book is. So definitely check it out if you see it. I'll put some pages on the Facebook page. See what.
Yeah.
So there you go, Kevin. You've been
hello.
Very patient there. Have you read anything recently that you'd like to talk about?
Well, the one thing I have read recently was the short 4-issue miniseries that was published by Graphic India, and it was called Empire of Blood. I don't know if you've heard of it at all.
No,
I haven't read it. No.
Oh, right. Well, the art in it was by Al Katina, who I suppose is probably best known for the Hawkworld miniseries that was written by Tim Truman years ago.
Yeah.
And it's a very uncomplimentary take on the British Empire. In this, right. I suppose you could say, sort of like this kind of Elseworlds sort of like setup. Mm. And it concerns kind of this young kid, Tom Lawrence, who obviously both the name and kind of the way he's been drawn resembles kind of T.E. Lawrence. And it's a story about how he becomes involved in this, not revolution, but this uprising in India against the British who were running it. And it's got elements in it of, well, actually, the British are portrayed as being quite close to Nazis, because in this world, the British take this substance called Aqua Vitale. And what it is actually distilled blood from a vampire, which kind of makes them immortal. And what happens is kind of the British go around imprisoning the Indians or keeping them in camps, draining them of their blood, because it has to be mixed in with this vampire blood. And it's now a drink which is sold around the world.
That's clever.
And yeah, and there's a few sort of like unlikely plot twists in it, but it's really good, and it's really kind of like quite different as well. It was one of the last things I was kind of like expecting, and it was really good.
Where did you find out about this?
I found it on Comixology.
Oh, right. Oh, I always use Comixology quite a lot.
Is this the same company that did the Grant Morrison book?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think they... I don't know if they're the ones who are reprinting the Ramayana series, but they're certainly doing 18 Days. And also the new Grant Morrison thing. Have you got Avatrix or something?
Yeah, I've read the first issue of that. Yeah, cool. It's good.
Yeah, so no, they sort of put that out. But say the art in it's fantastic. And it's just quite an original idea. Obviously, you know, the English, the age you keep referring to is as the English, the British Empire, and you can tell they're not keen. It's a really interesting story, and say, you know, it's 4 issues, it's not too bad, and, you know, it just tells a nice story with the beginning, middle, and an end. Yeah, so it's good.
Do you read most of your books digitally then, do you, Kev?
Yeah, I do these days. Yeah, especially since I got a tablet as well.
Right, okay.
Yeah. I used to like reading them on the computer because I've got quite a big screen and you kind of really get the impact of it. But since I got, you know, a tablet, it's much preferred just to sit in a comfy chair now. And I can just get through loads of them, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the same. Like, Comixology on my tablet. Do you quite... How do you feel about the guided view narrative?
I don't like it, to be honest.
Yeah, some people do like it, some people don't. You prefer to see a whole page.
Yeah, completely. I think
I do as well, actually.
I looked at the first issue of Future Primitive on Guided View, and I just really didn't like it because the way that was like drawn, we had lots of double page spreads and things like that, and I felt that, you know, on the Guided View, you just completely kind of lose the impact of it.
Yeah,
I can see what you mean. Yeah, definitely. Mm.
I suppose when you're looking at your own books, it gives you a whole different perspective of it, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And as I say, that's something which, you know, we really want to make, you know, an impact visually. And, you know, on Guided View, or even just looking at it on the phone, wasn't something, you know, I particularly enjoyed, to be honest.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. So, thank you for that book. But we're going to go back to you now. We're going to put the spotlight on you to talk about your books.
Yes,
indeed. You know how this works. You told us before you listened to this show, so you know what's coming.
A lot of abuse, basically. Yeah,
pretty much. He's prepared to give it as much as take it, I'm sure. Now, the latest book that's on the way is Planet of Demons.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant. We love it. But for those who don't know about Planet of Demons, tell us more about it. Pitch it to us, if you will.
Okay, well, basically, it's a story about this 17th century magistrate from New England called Amos Dethridge, who, and we find out how this happens in the first story, has found himself in the occult realm of the Klipoth, which are 10 worlds of, you know, demonology, kind of witchcraft, that kind of thing, which is, you know, taken from the Kabbalah. And the first story, you know, shows him, you know, in his role as the magistrate of the Klipoth, and so tells us how he actually got there and the events that took place in kind of like New England that led to his entry there, and then it all comes together in the last part of it. It's probably best to give you a bit of background to the Klipoth, and as I say, they're 10 worlds of kind of like forbidden knowledge, demons, as I say, kind of witchcraft ruled over by demon princes. And the role of the Klipoth in Jewish myth is that the different characters there negatively influence people on Earth.
Right.
So it's quite a complex idea. So I've had to try and simplify it, I suppose, as much as I can.
You've done a good job.
Yeah. Because one of the things that struck me about this book is you can tell as soon as you start it, there's a world behind it. There's definitely you've taken time to create the backdrop, but it doesn't affect the narrative going through it. Because like you say, you've got two, you've almost got two interlinking stories of this guy, because you're seeing him in this sort of demonic world and him leading up to there. I never felt, you know, I could follow it perfectly and I knew where it was going. But how much research did that take to, you know, create this sort of demonic backdrop?
Well, it took quite a, the clip art itself took quite a lot of research. I mean, you know, in this day and age, you know, you can find so much kind of like stuff online. So I did quite a lot of research, although I've always been interested in the idea of these sort of like demonic worlds, not just in the clip art, but also in kind of old texts such as the Book of Enoch, where Enoch went up to visit the seven heavens, seven underworlds. So for a long time, I've always wanted to write a story with that type of a setting. So yeah, I did quite a lot of research, obviously in kind of New England as well, and then just kind of put it together, because I'd always wanted to write that type of a story with that type of a setting, where I can explore those kinds of ideas.
It also feels to me there's a kind of pulpy sort of vibe to it, mixed with a Hammer horror kind of vibe, you know, like the classic films about Witchfinder General and stuff.
Oh yeah, that is a classic.
Did that sort of stuff influence you? In, you know, were you thinking of that kind of stuff?
I think the Witchfinder General kind of definitely influenced me. Obviously, you know, the character of Amos and, you know, the Vincent Price character in Witchfinder General are really two quite different things.
Yeah.
But I'd always say I'd always wanted to write a story about a witchfinder, and I'd wanted to write a story about a witchfinder ever since I was at university, to be perfectly honest. Because when I was there, although I was studying art, we were allowed to do modules on other subjects, and I took one on medieval history. And for 3 or 4 weeks, we actually studied the witchcraft trials. And I think it was looking at it in that way that kind of has always made me want to write a story about those types of ideas.
So in some ways, this idea has been in your head since then, that little gem of like...
Yeah, it has. It's been through, you know, several kind of different incarnations. And this one, I suppose, is quite different from how I originally thought it would be. But yeah, it has certainly been there a long time. It's certainly been, I suppose you could say, a story I've always wanted to write.
Cool. Yeah, I say the art by Paul Moore and the colours by Stefan Macon. They're really great.
Maconchich, I think is how you pronounce it. I'm not too sure.
I mean, the combination of your writing and those guys on the art, even Rob Jones doing the lettering, is really evocative of the period when they're back in New England. It kind of brings up that tone of... You seen that film The Witch? Quite recent. It feels very much in that kind of...
No, I haven't. I haven't actually seen The Witch, and I think because of the fact I was writing part of Planet of the Demons, where when I could have gone and seen it, I think I purposely didn't want to. I didn't want to be too influenced either one way, sort of like, or the other. I mean, because sometimes I might have watched things and you see something which might be similar to something I'm writing. And so I then purposely change it because I think, oh, people might think not necessarily that I've copied it. But, you know, I don't want people to make that sort of connection. So I sometimes think that the best way I can avoid that is by actually not watching these things. So anything which I write, you know, is, you know, how I want it to be rather than, you know, that's our kind of influences.
Okay.
They're completely separate, but you're good.
I'd find it on a bookshelf, maybe next to Defoe by Pat Mills and Lee Gallagher, which is another great book.
That's a really good series. Thanks.
Very similar. You're very interesting. Both, you can tell there's research done for both of them, can't you? Really good.
It's got that really admirable trait of, like, with Pat Mills, kind of really looking into it and researching what he's doing. And I imagine 90% of what you're reading and making notes of doesn't even make it into the comic, but it needs to be there.
Absolutely, it's just having knowledge about this world, so you can write about it, I suppose, with at least, you know, a small amount of, authority, for want of a better word, I guess.
How did you find writing the dialogue, you know, that sort of old-timey dialogue?
Yes, I'd love to hear that,
I think I wrote the dialogue, or I'd write the dialogue, in kind of normal, kind of like everyday speech to start with. And then once I get into editing it, because, you know, I spend absolutely ages kind of editing kind of the dialogue. I then go over it and then trying to put in old words or kind of look for words which you know, a bit archaic. And also, you know, read various things like some kind of old plays or that kind of thing to get more of a feeling
how that's people would act. That's quite an interesting way of doing it. Because I guess, you know, first and foremost, you're getting the dialogue out how you want it to be, don't you? You can then
What you want the characters to say, you know, for the flow of the conversation. But as I say, certainly then kind of read some old plays or,
There's one where Amos is talking, he's got like a demon hoisted up and he's interrogating him. And he says mercy, and he goes, "Wretched he goat, we are far from the pillar of mercy." That's such a great line.
Yeah, it's good.
Thanks.
I mean,
but I like that one as well.
Yeah.
When you, I mean, the dialogue is one thing, and having the research, but how was it working with Paul Moore as well? Because did you? Show him images of research, you know, did you give him like a document sort of saying, right, this world looks like this? How was that?
I did give quite a big description of what I wanted the world to look like, and I do that with kind of everything I write. That was also very much the case with Future Primitive.
I can imagine with that must have been a novel you must have written to describe Future Primitive, because that's
a
strange environment.
It sounds like a lot, but each script, you know, it's 24 pages, and for description and dialogue, each script comes in at about 8,500 words, which is actually quite a lot. I go into quite a lot of detail. I suppose I could be a bit of a tyrant with it. but what I did with Planet of the Demons was I'd set up a Pinterest board, which I kind of shared with Paul. So that's just full of kind of images, both from, you know, New England, Salem witchcraft, and also, you know, different interpretations of Klipoth and the types of kind of creatures and demons that, you know, inhabit it. But also, I also put a lot of visual references into the script as well. So that he doesn't necessarily have kind of the hard work or trying to work out what it is I want. You know, if I find something which I think is appropriate or like a location, then I'll just actually put that into the script in the appropriate panel just to give him an idea.
You'll put the actual photograph into the script, you mean, sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, okay, interesting.
Yeah, I've had some authors do that, and it can be really handy at times, because if you've got a very precise or something you really want in there, having a bit of photo reference that, like, okay, you want it to do that, that's fine, that's easy.
Yeah, there's a location in New England called the Witch's Caves of Framingham, which is a location which we use in the second issue. And I just happened to find, you know, quite a lot of, you know, photo reference on it. And I thought, well, rather than just keeping it to myself, you know, I'll just put it in the script for Paul to have a look at, so he's got an idea of what it's like. So, you know, he can just make something up himself, you know, from there.
Brilliant.
Okay. How did you hook up with Paul, Kev?
How I hooked up with most of my artists, to be perfectly honest.
Here we go.
which is through DeviantArt.
Okay. Because we obviously know Paul. Paul's a friend of the show. He's a great artist, I put him similar to. He's got a little bit of Charlie Adlard about him for me.
I definitely agree with that. Yeah.
I would prefer the Charlie Adlard stuff, if I'm honest.
Yeah, it looks great coloured as well. Yeah. I'm not really sure that Charlie's stuff well, because he's drawn in black and white for so long, looks so good coloured. But yeah, this looks great, I'd say.
I'm really, really pleased with kind of how it's worked out, both with Paul's art and also with Stefan's colouring as well.
Yeah. There's a lovely balance of story and action as well, because this is historical and fantastical. You know, some stories, when they have those sort of elements, they can get really bogged down with very dialogue heavy, you know, exposition. Sure. But this one, you're not afraid to sort of have splash pages and have double page spreads and just have some real good action. You know, this demon sort of shoulder barging the hero. And the last panel, the splash page on the last page of issue one. How do you describe that? I mean, it's an amazing cliffhanger. Anyone who knows me knows I love a cliffhanger that's going to make you want to read it.
I always love a cliffhanger. Absolutely.
And that one's perfect to be like, what the hell is going on?
You look at it the first time and you think it looks like something, and then you look a bit deeper into it and you realise it's something else. I'm going to put it that way.
Was that?
Yeah, yeah. No, I honestly can't remember how I kind of described that, but I decided that I wanted to have this, this female character who we're introduced to in the second issue, who you can actually see in that image. Yeah. And I just brought up Miranda as, like, you know, a host, which is kind of incubating this kind of, like, strange kind of life form.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, certainly the last 3-4 pages were all, as Amos was on his journey, you know, going across the surface of the planet of Thariel, was very much all leading up to connect that last page to, you know, hopefully build it up a little bit and give it some impact.
I love the fact that it's sort of you look at it like planets as well, rather than like, you know, realms or demonic things. It gives it a real, you know, edge, I think, you know.
Well, I mean, this is the thing with the clip. I'll say they're kind of ten planets of kind of like demons,
yeah.
But they're actually connected by, you know, secret pathways as well, and they all kind of like, you know, respond to different vices, say based on kind of the people who inhabit it.
Yeah.
But there's also one passageway to kind of Earth where they kind of exert their influence or actually appear on Earth, and, you know, as we find out in the story, is that Amos is also the gatekeeper of that pathway as well. And as I say, we find out how he became the gatekeeper in that first adventure.
There's so much going on in this series, but it is also the hero is really cool as well. I mean, did you find when you created him, you became a bigger fan of him than you originally thought?
I think it always takes a little while to actually, when you first start writing a character, I think it takes a little while to actually find them. You know, because I think it's very difficult, or perhaps it's just me, but I think it's very difficult to write a character with real authority right from page one. So you're sort of like finding your way into how the character speaks, how he acts, all that kind of thing. I mean, that's something which you might not notice so much by the time you actually finally read it, because obviously I've revised that a lot, so that, you know, especially, you know, I think that by the time it came to going over the lettering script for the first issue, I'd already written the second issue. So by then, I had a much better idea of kind of what the character was like. So I could change any dialogue to fit more in with that and tie it all in a bit more closer together. And also make it, you know, just give him more of a character in the first issue, which I've been developing in the second, if that at all makes sense.
I mean, we see that in comics quite a lot. I think one of the biggest examples that jumps to mind is Frank Miller's first Sin City,
right,
with Marv. At first, Marv doesn't really have too much of a strong voice, but by the end of the run, it's absolutely, that's the character. And he's got
No, I think it's very true. I mean, it's not like that for kind of all characters. There are some characters which, you know, you seem to be able to, you know, get your head into, you know, really quite quickly.
And I guess it's,
I think one of those characters would be like Amos's wife. I found her quite, you know, quite easy to write, or quite enjoyable to write. And it's for some of the others as well.
What do you think as readers? Because we're just getting to know the characters. Obviously, as the writer, you're a lot more kind of in with them than you know them. By the time you kind of found your feet, the readers have too. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Those first couple of fumbles don't really matter.
The great thing is to say, when you found your feet, you can then go back and change all the things, so, you know, it feels stronger at the beginning as well.
I mean, I think it's an easy pitfall for a lot of writers to fall into. They know a character so well, but the reader doesn't. So like some people write it and they kind of think, oh well, you know, they know how this character acts, but the reader doesn't. And if you don't necessarily fill in those gaps or join those lines, you know, you're going to lose people.
I think that's true, but at the same time, I'm also very aware of not explaining a character too much.
So they
still got an air of unpredictability to both what they say and kind of how they act. I mean, because normally I don't like writing first person sort of like narrative, because I sometimes think that gets you into the character's head too much. I sometimes find it slightly overwritten. Whereas kind of with Planet of Demons, I have kind of given Amos kind of like a notebook, so he can occasionally kind of record thoughts.
Right, interesting.
But at the same time, I don't want to go into that too in depth. Yeah.
Yeah, I think with a horror fantasy type story, you don't want that in a monologue, do you? You don't want that. Like you do with maybe a crime noir story where that's quite cool. But I think with something shrouded in mystery and, you know, tension, it's not always that useful, I think. I agree completely,
I think the kind of First Children Planet, I mean, I use it in order to kind of vaguely or briefly introduce some of the ideas relating to, you know, the setup of the story.
Yeah.
But I wasn't interested in him going on and on and on about himself, which I do sometimes find in comics, to be perfectly
honest. Right, okay.
Just enough as a little bit of an intro, and then, you know, take it from there.
Okay. So, Kev, a lot of your books seem to be historical. Am I going around saying that, you know? You've got a real interest in that. Well, who would you quote as influences? You know, reading... I take it you've read comics for quite a few years now, have you? Or did you grow up on them?
Donkey's years. Yeah, I started reading when I was like 11 or 12 or something like that.
Right.
I've always been interested, always really liked, Kirby.
Right, okay.
I liked Alan Moore, Grant Morrison, all of those people. Away from comics, although you wouldn't recognise it in my right, I'm also a big fan of J.G. Ballard.
Okay.
And also, I'm a complete nut as regards William Blake as well.
I can see the Blake route, immediately.
I've always been into Blake. Funny, when I was at university, I actually lived around the corner from him. Because Blake spent his entire life living in London, apart from 3 years when he lived on the coast in Feltham. When I was at uni, I was actually at Chichester, and where I lived was quite literally 2 minutes round the corner from kind of Blake's cottage. So I used to go past it every day. But I studied a lot of his work at uni. Looking at the way he combined words and images and symbolism used and all that kind of stuff. He's also quite... He was probably more of an influence on Future Primitive, but, you know, he's a real influence to me.
Tell us a bit more about Future Primitive, because that's another... That's quite a big... How can you put that in a paragraph, you know? For those who don't know about...
That's an excellent question. You know, so when you're trying to explain the idea, you know, and people say, oh, you've just got to do kind of like a one or two sentence log line, you think to yourself, how on earth am I going to explain Future Primitive in two sentences?
If you're going to explain it to an artist, would you say a lot of crowd scenes? Would that be, probably would be what you'd leave with?
Scenes. They're spectacle, and basically I want you to draw something the like of which I just haven't seen before.
Yeah.
I bet they love that.
To be honest with you, the artist took it as an absolute challenge, and he was completely dedicated to it. I've never known anything quite like it.
This has got to be a big chunk of his life, drawing this, because this is one of the most detailed comics I've seen for a long time.
It took him, you know, at least I hope he wasn't doing it 24/7. It took him probably about two and a bit years to draw. Yeah.
It's incredible. I really like it, I have to say. Yeah, beautiful stuff.
Thanks.
How do you say his name?
Slobodan Jovanovic.
Thank you for saying that.
Known Slobodan Jovanovic.
Oh, nice.
All right, okay.
Also known as Boban. But he was somebody I also met through Deviant, because I'd come up with a Future Primitive outline, and obviously I was looking for somebody to draw it, and I kind of saw his work on Deviant and thought, I really like this. I think this guy could do it. So I just sent him an email saying, would you be interested in looking at this idea? He kind of like had a look at it, and he started drawing sketches for it before he even wrote back to me.
Okay.
And from that moment on, you know, he was completely into the idea, and, you know, just did an amazing job. Yeah.
Because there's crowd scenes, there's sort of Aztecian sort of temples. It's craziness. It's big ideas and big craziness.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, we really wanted to create, you know, this secondary world with, you know, a really kind of believable logic to it, I suppose, and look, and just something, you know, which was, you know, hopefully quite original, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
I mean, the story itself, you know, you obviously were just asking about that, and I forgot about it, but... I suppose it's just, yeah, and I always wanted to write a Neanderthal sci-fi epic. And
who doesn't? We all do at some point, don't we?
well, it's easy. I suppose what I couldn't believe was why nobody else was doing them as well. It just seems such an obvious thing to do.
For those who haven't read it, Kev, it's Apocalypto turned up to about 2007, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It just goes completely off on one, doesn't it? And
yeah, completely. It's certainly a late night comic.
I mean, for those simple people in the crowd, it's Apocalypto in 2000 AD. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of vibe.
In heavy metal, you know.
Yeah.
It's like,
oh god, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
There's definitely very heavy metal influence. I mean, I suppose that with that, one of the I've always been a big fan of Warren's 1984 magazine. Especially the stories that were drawn by Alex Nino. Which was kind of big. There was a story in an early 1984, I think, called Hunter's Moon, possibly, which was kind of reprinted later on. And that was, I wouldn't say necessarily it was a template for it, but it had a lot of double page spreads, had a very lush kind of landscape, these kind of towering buildings. And I wrote Future Primitive, having not kind of written any comics for about 7 years. Okay. And when I decided I wanted to start writing comics again, you know, I thought, what type of story do I really want to write? Mm-hmm. And I think it'd be fair to say that, you know, Future Primitive was that story. Yeah. It was something which was big. It was kind of imaginative. It was influenced by my interest in Kirby, mythology, ancient aliens, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, and I just kind of threw it all in there. Yeah.
There's those issues of 2001. Which have got that sort of primitive sci-fi element thing going on there.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've always been a big fan of 2001.
Yeah.
I must say, I mean, we've said it before on this show, especially in the world of independent comics, there's a lot of the same stuff going around, you know.
Yeah.
How much stuff can you truly say, wow, I've never seen that before? And I think Future Primitive definitely fits into that mold. There's nothing like it, you know, out there.
Thanks.
That's all right.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, obviously it took about 3.5 years to, you know, from start to finish. But at the end of the day, I really couldn't have been happier with how it, you know, turned out.
And the attention to detail and the time taken is all there on the page,
But I said there was a lot of, before I started writing, there was quite a lot of world building that kind of like went into that. Especially not just the world they inhabited, but their sort of like the Neanderthals' cosmic religion, which I spent quite a long time kind of working out kind of the details for as well. But because the ideas and that all tie into the main story anyway, so it was all quite necessary. Yeah,
Neanderthals' cosmic religion. That'll give you an idea.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's available as a trade now, isn't it? Is it Marcosia who are putting this out?
That's right, yes. You can get it through Amazon or through the Marcosia website.
Yeah.
Cool.
Is it a book that you're going to have with you at any shows?
Well, the next ones I'm doing, I'm actually going to ICE next weekend, but I'm not doing anything there. But yeah, I'm doing Stoke-on-Trent. At the beginning of October, and I should hopefully have some copies of Planets of Demons with me as well. And also, I'm going to do Thought Bubble, and I think Marcosia have got a stand there, so I can sign some.
Okay.
Hopefully, I'll find some copies there. Yeah.
Yeah, Harry Marcos is a bit. We don't talk about him enough on this show, but they put out some great books from there.
Absolutely. It's they've been going, you know, for quite some time, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. Yeah,
they're always coming out with stuff. You know, some of it's really good, some of it's not always to my tastes.
Yeah,
but they're like hardy perennial, aren't they? I guess.
Yeah. I can't remember the name of it. They did a Yeti versus Nazis comic a couple of years ago now, which I really loved. I thought it was excellent.
What? This sounds amazing.
Yeah,
it does sound good.
yeah. It was a bit like The Bunker, but with Sasquatch in it. Do you know what I mean?
Right,
it's like that sort of.
God, I need this. I need this in my life. Future Primitive is also available on Comixology, isn't it, I believe?
Yeah, that's right. We recently released the fifth and final part on it. There was a bit of a delay getting the last cover coloured, because apart from kind of like Stefan, I wanted to get some kind of guest colourists kind of doing the actual covers that we put on Comixology.
Yeah.
There's a bit of delay in it, but yeah, it finally went up there about 3 or 4 weeks ago, along with the Future Primitive collection.
Okay.
Nice. So now your focus is all on Planet of Demons.
Absolutely.
So, and that's 4 issues, isn't it? So
Yes, that's right. I'm currently halfway through writing the third issue. So, and I've got to get that finished by the end of kind of this coming week. So, yeah, nice. Then I'll look for a couple of weeks and then crack on with kind of writing the fourth one.
So, do you prefer writing mini-series rather than like an ongoing or one-shots? Do you prefer like those?
Well, the one thing I find it difficult to write, which I very rarely bother with, are short stories. I don't know why, but it's not something which I've ever had. I don't know if you could say the patience for.
I'm the same. I will say. I respect all those people who seem to just churn out like anthology tales because they're a tricky thing to get right. I think.
Yeah.
I suppose if I have an idea that I really like, I want to explore it perhaps in more than four or five pages. But I wouldn't say I like the idea of doing something which can be read with, you know, a beginning, middle, and end. So I suppose if you're talking about a book which is like 100, 120 pages, then that would be four or five issues. Hmm. So I suppose I perhaps do it with that in mind. But having said that, you know, if I could write an ongoing series, I'd bite your arm off.
Right.
Well, that's something I would love to do, and I've got to make that, you know, something which I do.
I'd love to bite his arm off too.
Now, when you say an ongoing series, are we talking creator-owned ongoing series, or
I think so. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
But you wouldn't say no if any of the big companies sort of say we'd like you to write this character.
Yeah, you get to choose. How about let's play this? You get to choose an existing character that you'd like to write, and you get approached to do it. Who would it be?
That would be the Black Knight.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, nice.
That's him.
I like that.
The one with the sort of bomber jacket on, or
definitely not the bomber jacket. the great thing about the Black Knight is that he's a legacy character.
Yep.
And apart from, you know, in the present day, you know, you can write stories about the Black Knight set in the times of King Arthur, set in kind of other worlds, such as, you know, the story they had in the
Black
and White comic.
Yeah, they had a Weird World recently, and that didn't run half as long as it should have done. I thought it was just getting interesting as well.
I was actually really disappointed with the last Black Knight series.
Oh, are you? Okay.
He hasn't had one for ages, has he?
Not really, virtually. He's had very few in total, isn't he?
Yeah,
really?
he's a very few, so he's a character whose, you know, potential hasn't really been kind of like explored, I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose what was also slightly annoying about the most recent version was the fact that they had the Avengers guest starring in it.
Yeah, and in the first issue as well, pretty much, wasn't it? I think. Yeah.
Yeah. The whole story was about the Avengers trying to take kind of the Black Knight in, or take him back to Earth, and all the rest of it. But yeah. Say, you know, he's a legacy character, so you can do stories set in, you know, the Arthurian period during the Crusades.
Yeah.
You know, anything like that. And that's what I'd want to do, but I think I'd probably want to, you know, write Black Knight, which, you know, set on Weird World now, and there's, you know, 101 cool things you could do with it.
I haven't read any
of that Weird World stuff. I've heard good things about it.
Haven't you? The first Weird World kind of miniseries that was written by kind of Jason Aaron was really good.
Who wrote it originally? Was it Doug Mensch or someone like that? I'm trying to remember
Back in the 70s, yeah, it was Doug Mensch, wasn't it?
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
I think Chris Claremont might have written the first one.
Yeah,
the originals had really nice art by John Buscema as well, didn't they?
Yeah, lovely stuff. Yeah. I've just found that, by the way. It's Abominable Glory, and it's from Marcosia, written by Martin Hayes. Art is by Chris Ascombe. World War II, the Himalayas. British commandos knew their extracting a Japanese spy would be difficult, but they thought the German paratroop would be the most monstrous thing they'd have to face. Find out how wrong they were in this tale of blood, bullets, monsters, and madmen. There you go. That sounds good, doesn't it?
Nice.
Yeah,
great cover, too.
Yeah, really good. Yeah.
I have to ask for my copy.
Yeah. I reviewed it, and sadly the review's gone down because it was at Beard Rocket and the site's gone down now, but I reviewed it. Right. I did actually suggest there may have been some Abominable Snowman fellatio going on.
And, oh, really?
Yeah. I asked Martin about this at London Super Comic Con a couple of years ago, and he said he couldn't confirm or deny. So,
right.
Yeah, read it and see what you think.
That's what the fans want.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeti smut. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Let's get on it. Yeti porn. Let's do it.
Yeah. Is a Yeti an Abominable Snowman? It is, isn't it?
I think so.
Oh, the Yeti is the Abominable
Snowman. Yes.
Okay.
We just got to make sure we get our facts right on this show. We don't want anyone emailing us and slagging us off.
Yeah.
No. So also, Kev, you do some tutoring in Staffordshire.
That's right.
We've had a previous guest, Tally Bertram, who does Badger
Yes,
Manor.
A good old Tally. I like Tally.
So,
do you like us being referred to as that?
Sorry?
Good old Tally.
Do you like us being called good?
I like it. No, she's a good girl.
So, kind of, how did that kind of start, and what do you do when you go up to see them? Yes.
Well, there was a chance of meeting into about 3 years ago. I went to the London Super Comic Con, and I went there because I was trying to find a publisher for Future Primitive. I met up there with Gino John Charles.
I don't know.
He's one of the lecturers at kind of like Staff Uni as well. He does them with art and colouring and all that. Mm. But I'd known John for a number of years, so I met up with him at say the London Con, and he introduced me to Adrian, obviously, who's the kind of course tutor.
Adrian Tooth, isn't it? I think.
Adrian Tooth, the Toothmeister, and we went for a drink afterwards, and he said, would you be interested in coming up and kind of giving a talk to, you know, the students? Because, as I say, before I wrote Future Primitive, I hadn't written anything for like 7 years, and that's because all my time was taken up with DJing. I'd written before, and I'd written stuff for like Marvel and Image.
Okay.
But then I took 7 years off, where I suppose it was like an extended sabbatical, where I was just DJing in Brighton, sometimes Ibiza and all that. But then I decided that I wanted to start writing comics again. I had Future Primitive to try and sell to someone. So he met AD and he said, do you want to come down and give us a talk about your experiences in the past? So I went up there, went quite well. And they said, would you be interested in coming in, you know, two or three times a term, you know, doing tutorials for the students? So I thought, yeah, I'd love to. So I've been doing that for the last couple of years.
That's a long trip for you, isn't it?
It's not too bad. It's only 3 hours. It's okay.
Right, okay. Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah, no, they mean, because I always go up for 2 days at a time, and
right,
you know,
okay.
they always put me up. So, yeah, you know, it's 3 hours from Brighton Station to Stoke Station, and the uni's right next door to it. So, yeah, it's not too bad.
What did you do for Marvel, Kev?
I did. I shudder to say what it was. I actually did the Marvel Mangaverse series with Ben Dunn.
Oh, okay.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Which ones did you do?
I did the second part of the event that introduced it all.
Right.
And then I wrote the first, there was kind of the six issues that came out after that, which was the regular series, which I produced with Ben.
Oh, nice.
How did you find working on that then?
Yeah.
Yeah, to be perfectly honest with you, I had the chance to kind of write Marvel characters that I've been reading since I was it. So it was kind of a dream come true, and because of the fact that we were creating our own world, you know, we weren't bogged down by continuity. We could just do these versions of the Marvel characters, changing them obviously as we saw fit. And yeah, I had a really good time doing it. There two or three of the issues I'm really happy with, some of the others not so much. I thought it went, on the whole, I was quite happy with it. I don't think that kind of thing's got the greatest of reputations, and you know, the kind of things I write now are so completely different I don't really kind of think or kind of like, you know.
But it's the learning, isn't it?
Too much.
You must have learned quite a lot doing it.
Yeah, I did, and you know, you had kind of like a monthly deadline, and I managed to get to New York out of it to visit the Marvel offices, so that was all cool.
That's great.
So you know, it was good.
Who did you work at? You said Image as well. What did you work on there?
It was another series I did with Ben Dunn, because I've got to know Ben through, you know, when he was running Antarctic Press.
Because
I'd written a few things to them. I'd written some kind of Warrior Nun stories for them, including a World War II miniseries called Brigantia, which was about this British Warrior Nun.
Okay.
So I really remember the Warrior Nun series, and also, was it Gold Digger?
Yeah, Gold Digger. I think they're still publishing Gold Digger.
Yeah, that's one of those titles that's just been running forever, since like the
90s. Well past kind of like the 200s now, I think, isn't it?
Oh, wow.
But I got to know Ben through that, and we started working on the agents. Then the opportunity came up to do kind of like Marvel, the Mangaverse book. And I think Ben wrote the first issue, but I think he might have written himself into a bit of a hole, because he just phoned me up one day and he said, "I've got a few problems with the second issue." He said, "Would you be interested in writing it?" And, you know, obviously, of course I would. So he sort of like sent me this kind of like vague script for the first issue, and I just had to kind of work. He didn't have any idea where he was going with it, so I just had to try and contrive some ending for it for like 40 pages. But thankfully, it got approved and it went okay. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Cool.
There's probably a few tales of certainly big two books where they've started writing them and they have no idea how the whole thing is going to end.
Yeah.
But, I used to hear that. Yeah. Was it Lobdell? Is it Lobdell?
Steve Lobdell. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Was it him? He was on X-Men for a long time, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. I think probably a bit too long.
Yeah, and I've heard that. I mean, I heard somewhere that he was just writing and writing, and there was no, you know, there's no end in sight. Do you know what I mean? He was building up all these things, and then he left, and you know, which is great if you're on a title for a long time. But if you don't know where you're going with it and then you leave, the person that comes in to pick it up, Lord knows what they think as soon as they get it.
Anyway. Yeah, I suppose it's difficult, but I suppose at least you can look at it in a fairly kind of clear way, in so much you haven't got, you know, 100, because when I'm writing something, you know, there's 101 different ways I could do it, or 101 different directions it could go in. I suppose when you're coming in and looking at somebody else's story, you can, you know, make decisions on it in a quite, without too much emotion attached to it.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
And just think, well, this works, that doesn't work, I think I'm going to do this.
Mm.
Whereas, you know, you perhaps haven't got all those, I don't know if you could say insecurities.
Yeah. But, you're not, you know, too all attached. Those challenges. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because you can't see the wood for the trees sometimes. You don't.
I think that's a perfect way of describing it. Yeah.
Interesting. Mm. Yeah. I had no idea you had done this work for Marvel and Image. So.
Yeah. Well, as I say, it's a very long time ago. It was about 2003, so it was such a long time ago. You know, I don't even really think about it anymore, to be honest. It was so far ago in the mists of time.
What made you want to come back then? Was it just a case of you had a story in your head that you just had to tell?
Yeah, well, I suppose that having spent, you know, years mixing music, I suppose I wanted to do something that involved, you know, actually working with proper ideas again. And I was always used to be in touch with an artist called Alessandro, an Italian artist. And, you know, he kept saying, because we'd worked together in the past, and he said, I was always in touch with him. He said, "I really miss working with you." And I said, "Well, I really miss working with you, Alessandro." And I said, "Well, I'll have a think about what I can do." And once I started coming up with ideas again, I couldn't stop, to be perfectly honest with you. And also, you know, the late nights were starting to take their toll. So I thought, yeah, I think I'm going to start writing again and see what happens with it.
Nice. And now you're in deep and the show no signs of stopping.
No, absolutely not. And I've got absolutely no intention of stopping either. Yeah, I enjoy it too much.
Good man. I mean, obviously Planet of the Demons is the main one, but I'm guessing every writer has so many ideas in their head they want to do. Can you see what you want to do afterwards? I know it's early days, but is there other...
Yeah, no, completely. I've been working on kind of three things recently, three of them have got artists, but they're not quite ready to start on it yet. Okay. I want to do a new story with Boban, the future primitive artist. I mean, obviously the logical thing would be to do the second future primitive story, but I want to do something else with him first, which is set in the Greek underworld.
Okay.
He thinks quite small, doesn't he? When he's coming up with his ideas, he's not really pushing the boundaries. Greek underworld, Jesus.
No, a couple of years ago, I was on holiday and I was reading the Iliad by Homer. You know, as you do,
as you do. That's,
as you do. That's kind of normal poolside reading for me. And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be interesting to write a story about Achilles and the dead heroes of the Trojan War trying to mount a jailbreak out of Pluto's Hades?
Right.
Bloody hell, a prison break, essentially. Mm.
With Hades, myth. Yeah, that's right.
Sign me up, that sounds amazing already.
Yeah.
See, that one's easy to pitch in an
that
elevator.
One is incredibly easy to pitch. Yeah.
Yeah.
I spent the rest of the holiday distilling the idea down to two sentences.
Yeah. So, Planet of the Demons. When is that actually available? Is it available now for the masses?
No, it's coming out. Well, obviously we're in September now, so yeah, it's coming out later this month. I should imagine it will be more towards the end of the month, to be honest with you, because we're making some changes to kind of the lettering, but I think that should be finished this weekend, so hopefully it'll go to the printers within the next week or so. So yeah, hopefully by the end of the month, I imagine.
And it's going to be available on sites such as Comixology.
Yeah, well, it'll be on Comixology, and also, you know, it's in previews, available through Diamond. So yeah, you can get it through there. Yeah,
nice. What was that experience? Cool. What was that experience like working with Diamond?
Well, it's all done through Gino El Torres and Amigo Comics.
No, I've read about him. He's the head honcho of it, isn't he? Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, obviously he's written stuff such as Nancy Goes to Hell, and he did drums for Image Comics. He's done other stuff for Dark Horse.
Yeah,
he did some stuff with Eric Larson, didn't he? Didn't he do a crossover with Savage Dragon? Yeah,
he did. Yeah, that's right. And he's been running kind of Amigo Comics for like 3 or 4 years now. But you know, I always really liked some. I really liked the comics Amigo were putting out, like Ghost Wolf.
Quite friendly.
Yeah, and Rogues. Yeah, and I contacted him through kind of Facebook. And sent him some PDFs of both Future Primitive and Dis, and he was really into them. And I met up with him last year at the London Film and Comic Con, and he said, "You know, would you be interested in, you know, doing a comic for us?" So I said, "Well, of course I would. Thank you very much." So I was working on Planet of Demons at the time, anyway. So we just finished that off and sent it to him, and he said, "Yeah, great. Yeah, let's do it." Yeah.
Amazing.
Nice one.
It was comparatively hassle-free. It was all good.
Yeah. Touch wood.
Wait and see. Yeah. Yeah. Speak too soon.
Story for case of touch wood. Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously it's out at the end of September. We've been lucky enough to look at the amazing first issue. But for those out there who want to see more of Planet of the Demons, where can they go to check out some of the artwork or find out?
Well, we've got a page running on Facebook, which, you know, if you just do a search for Planet of Demons, I think that's the only option there. And obviously that's Demons spelt with an AE. And I mean, I have had Twitter feeds for both kind of Future Primitive and Dis, but I decided not to do one for kind of Planet because then I'd end up having 4 or 5 different Twitter feeds. Yeah. And I thought that's when things start getting a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, you get a nosebleed. So there's so much.
I thought, well, I'll put everything kind of on my own personal kind of Twitter feed at Kevin Gunstone, and because I can retweet it on all the other ones as well. So, you know, hopefully, you know, a reasonable number of people will be able to see it.
Amazing. So, and you're going to be at ICE, did you say?
Yeah, I'm going to go to ICE next. It's next Saturday, isn't it? I'm going up on the Friday, and I'm going to go to the Comics Uncovered event as well.
Yeah, we've got a few listeners who'll be checking that out as well. So,
all right, So there's that. Then Stoke. Then say I'm going to do Thought Bubble for the first time. I think, which is in early November, isn't it? Mm.
Yeah, and I think there's quite a few people doing Thought Bubble for the first time this year as well. So it should be a good one, and I'm sure you'll do well because the quality of the books you're putting out speaks for itself. We've always said it. It's, you know, you put out a good book, people will get it. It's as simple as
that. And Paul's killing it on the art, I've got to say. Love his stuff.
He's doing a great job, and you know, I think he did a really good job on the first one, but he's doing an even better job on the second one.
Wow.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he's got a good sense of movement as well. I always loved that.
Yeah, he's got a good sense of movement, and everything's so well drawn.
Yeah.
It's got a really nice kind of like inking style as well, which I think has actually evolved.
Just one last thing I'd like to say about it. He hasn't dwelled in the sort of dirtiness and made them all look like dirty Amish people. There's a couple of characters in there could almost be out of the Rolling Stones circle.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
I mean Amos's assistant Silas, I think he probably looks as though
Yeah, it could be, couldn't they? Yeah. Buffalo Springfield, something like that. Do you know what I mean? There's a little bit there going.
It's good that you got Paul, because I think over the next few years, you know, this is going to be one hell of a calling card for him.
I certainly hope so. You know, I really do.
Yeah.
Cool.
Brilliant. So thank you very much for talking to us, Bert. Kevin.
That's been great, Kevin. Yeah, really.
Cheers.
Stick with it.
Been a pleasure.
Yes, and stick with us. He's going to be with us for the whole show. He's not allowed to go. We've locked him in the cupboard with some bread and water. So, and he's told us the events he's going to go to. But what other events?
Oh, here we go.
What other events have we got coming up to?
Almost got it in there.
Yeah,
well, do you know what? The Segway thing. I'm going to try my best, but I'm not going to put my heart and soul into it anymore.
Oh,
don't be down about it. Don't be down about yourself.
I've got people actually sending me pictures of Segways now. It's getting ridiculous.
Thanks, Emily.
What events have we got coming up?
Oh, events, yeah. Next week on the 8th is Gosh. You got the creator of Hilda, which is a book we talked about a few weeks ago. He's doing a talk, and it's a little bit of a launch party for it. So that's at Gosh, 1 Berwick Street, Soho, at 7:30 p.m. to 9:30. The 10th of September is the aforementioned ICE, which is at the Studio Venue Company, 7 Cannon Street, Birmingham. Go to smallzone.co.uk. That will be our celebrity friend Mark Lamming, Jimmy Broxton, the aforementioned Duncan Fogredo, who's got some brilliant prints, absolutely beautiful prints. Get along and get them. Ex-guest of the show, Sean Phillips, Ben Oliver, Cole Potts is over from the States, and Pete Milligan, many, many more. So that's worth going to. On the 18th of September at 11 a.m. is another Comic Mart, which I might go to, actually. We've not talked about them for a while, but that's at the Royal National Hotel, Russell Square. If you want to get in between 11 and 12, it's a fiver. You get in for after 12 for free. On the 1st to the 10th, this is quite a big thing, actually, across the country. Well, not just our country, actually. There's some events all around the world. And it's Prog 2000. And we're all fans of the 2000 AD, as everyone in the UK should be. And there's Prog 2000 signings. So it's issue 2000 of 2000 AD. That'll confuse them. You've got, at Gosh on that day, the 1st of October, you've got Pete Milligan and Rufus Dayglow. Forbidden Planet and Shaftesbury Avenue, you've got Clint Langley, Rob Williams and Fraser Irvin. Scorch Comics in Eastbourne, you've got Mick McMahon, Chris Weston and Boo Cook. In Infinity Beyond in Shrewsbury, you've got Liam Moore and John Repian, who we love, with their great people, and Steve Yole. Waterstones in Princes Street, Edinburgh, you've got Alan Grant and Gordon Rennie. So that's really worth it. There are more. There's some in America. If you check the 2000 AD site, 2000 AD online, you'll find where all the events are, but it's well worth it. It's going to be a great issue, and there's a few surprises coming. I know Nemesis the Warlock is coming back by Kev O'Neill and Pat Mills, so there's some great strips in it. The 2nd of October is a local one to you, Dan, actually. Demon Con is back.
Yes.
Which is a very small event. Don't go there thinking it's going to be a huge event. It's not. It's at the Royal Star Arcade in Maidstone. At it are friends of ours, Dave Brown, Andy Clift, Mike Garley and Mike Stock, Chris Sides and Chris Tavrell. That's a small, it's basically in a little shopping centre, which they close off. And it's all comics and crafts
and stuff. Dawn of the Dead? Is it like Dawn of the Dead?
A little bit like that, yeah. Nice. Yeah. Without the bikers.
Oh, yeah. That's a shame.
And on the 6th of October, the NYCC is back, the New York Comic Con, at the Javits Centre between 11th and 12th Avenue in New York. Takes up about 3 city blocks. I'm going to be there, so if you are a listener from the States and you're going to the NYCC, please hook me up and we'll have a coffee, because it'd be lovely to meet people from other countries. I'll be hanging out with Lamming and the Mighty Vander and Matt Harrower, so it's going to be a big old event. So pop down to Artist Alley, which is where all the cool people go. There you go. That's it for events, guys.
And Tony.
Nice one.
And me, yeah.
have we got any shout-outs this week?
I've got three.
Go on,
you've
first,
got
mate,
three,
yeah.
Did you say, Dan?
Two Kickstarters.
Ambassador, you're really spoiling us. Go on.
I was dropping a load of Ferrero Rocher jokes in work, and no one was getting them.
What a bunch of
the ambassadors!
What a bunch of millennials.
Yeah.
How do you mean you were dropping a bunch of? How many different?
Well, I kept
Ferrero
on mentioning
Rocher
the ambassador. Ambassador's bull. You're spoiling us. This. None of them. I don't know if they were kind of, the jokes weren't landing or they weren't getting the references.
Yeah, I think you just want to move
on. They just don't understand you.
It's just...
The fault's on them, if I'm
honest.
Exactly.
it's always someone else's fault.
Anyway, we've got two great Kickstarters. There's a plethora of Kickstarters, as you reminded me, Vince. There's loads of...
Yeah.
September the 1st seemed to be the day of Kickstarters. Everyone unleashed them. So.
I've named two that I'm aware of. Kickstarter Cognition Issue 1. That will only have days left when you hear this podcast, but that's one that's well worth backing. Got some great prints in that, and the Chris Walsh's issue 2 of Ness, which is again going really well for him. Again, another comic to check out. It's fantastic. Got some great prints in there, by one by Vince, yeah, and another lots of great by myself.
But, have faith in yourself, Dad.
Yeah. And I wanted to give a quick shout out to Nick Prolix, who's the artist writer on the Sheep and the Wolves webcomic. He done a fantastic pin-up for Vanguard of the character Woden.
That was amazing.
It's really good. So yeah, cheers, Nick.
We're hopefully getting Nick on board to do some reviews
for
Down the Tubes, of which friend of the show or fourth member Emily Owen is also starting to do reviews, and she's written some very good ones.
There goes the neighbourhood.
Yeah.
Now, while we're on the Kickstarter tip, I've got two just to give a quick shout out for. One is the new volume of Afterlife Inc. from our friend John Locke. He's bringing out the new book of the Afterlife series. Anyone who's been at a show has seen the big punch table. And Afterlife Inc. is a brilliant series that you definitely need to check out. So Man Made God is the fourth volume. And John always puts out like completely finished sort of like graphic novels and stuff. So, and he's already, he spoke to me about it and said he wanted to get pretty much most of it done and pay sort of, you know, funding the artists and stuff himself. And the Kickstarter is just to finish it off and get it out. And the quality is always there with all the Afterlife books. So definitely check out that one. And also, we've said many times on this show, we love Ryan K. Lindsay's work. We've mentioned his book several times. The Kickstarter for Dear Editor is currently going, and that is always amazing value for money, what you get on that Kickstarter. The third volume, I've already backed it. He sends out so much stuff, so many goodies. He sends out essays that he's written about major characters, like, you know, some issue ones of his previous books. You know, you definitely get your value for money, and because it's a digital-only book, I think like it starts at $1. You can get the book for $1.
Good on him.
Yeah. It's all about value for money, and he's a really good bloke. And also gives a lot of shout out to other people's work in the emails you get from Kickstarter. Those endless emails you get from Kickstarter as soon as you back things. So definitely check out Dear Editor, the new one.
Okay.
Tony, have you got any shout outs?
Just a couple. Catherine Briggs, look her up at catherinebriggs.com. I'm working on a review for Triskelion. Which is, I think you'd like it actually, Kev. It's Greek mythology and stuff. I'm just trying to wrap my head around it. Lovely, lovely art. And I see she's been getting attention from some image writers. So I think she's a lady on the rise. Brett Uren has done a Kickstarter. He started that for Torso Bear Volume 3.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a fun project and really a real fun read and well worth backing. And finally, a big shout out to my mate and Vampirella cosplayer Matt Harrower, because he is now in Bartkira. If you go to Bartkira, BartKira, Bartkira.com, it's basically a mashup of stories that mash up The Simpsons and Akira. It's an absolutely fucking genius idea. Yeah, and Matt has absolutely knocked it out of the park. He's a big fan of Akira, I know that for a fact, and his stuff looks gorgeous. And it's you can read it all online. A big old volume of it. I think this is the third volume, I think. I'm not 100% sure. But
isn't that coming up for an anniversary, Akira?
I think it is, isn't it? Yeah, I think you might be right.
Yeah.
It's got to be 30, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. God, really? Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me, but... Oh, wasn't that 80... Is it 88?
Yeah, it's got to be... Well, I think it might even be before that, isn't it?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Either way... Everyone on this podcast just felt really, really old.
I know, yeah.
Very old.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, go to, pardon me, it's volume 5 of Bartkira. And if you go to pages 207 to 211, so you can see how long this is, it's got Matt's work. Matt's amazing. Killing it at the moment. Yeah,
and Matt,
yeah.
You may run, you may hide, but we're going to get
you on the show.
Again.
Yeah. Well, me and him have written something, or I've written something for him, and hopefully that'll see the light of day soon. He's got a table
was
at
it on, was it on a toilet door?
Yeah. You know that thing where I get ladies to sit on wet newspapers on the crossword section, so that gives me something to write on when I'm bored.
Oh,
you know.
Oh God. Before we get into the recommendations, what is the latest with hashtag Miller Watch?
I think we're at day 27 on Mirror Watch. I was sitting in the corner the other day, just sort of gently rocking and crying, and obviously masturbating. And I checked my phone, and he still hasn't contacted us, actually, which is a shame. Day 27, Mirror Watch. If you know Mark Miller, or if you're near him, or you can see through his window, then please ask him to contact us.
He may be a bit busy. What with, I think the latest Miller Miller World Talent contest has just started, hasn't it?
We're all busy. Do you know what I mean? We've all got international careers.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Doesn't matter. Yeah. You ignore the awesome pods filth. What do you call it? Arse bantery. Do you know what I mean?
Copyright of Alfie Gallagher, 2015.
Yeah, Alfie Gallagher. He's back. He's sent me a message today.
Good day. Arse bantery.
Yes, basically, we've been called arse banter. That's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah. I like that.
Kevin knows firsthand that that's exactly what this show is.
Yeah. Well, I found that out anyway. It's sponsored by Keith Fares.
Less cocaine. Don't do cocaine. Less cocaine.
Or Jim, as he prefers to be known.
Yeah. You want to buy a fridge? Is it a fridge or washing machine?
Washing machine.
Got any poppers? Right. No. For you Americans out there, just Google Keith Fares.
Or don't.
Yeah, and or don't. Actually, yeah. No, don't. Oh, dear. Anyway, what a show it's been. And we've talked about a lot of comics, but we're going to talk about some more comics, so deal with it, people. What would you like to recommend to people, Tony?
Mine's a quick and punchy one. Death Rattle. Death Rattle, which is actually... There's no vowels, and he's limited the letters, so it's DTHRTL, which is Death Rattle, if you can't work it out.
Right. A bit like Martin's Turtle.
Sorry,
that's quite random. A bit like Martin Skirtle, the footballer.
Oh, no.
Football? You completely lost all of us.
I thought you were all right. Right, it's another sort of... It's trippy. I'm going to be honest with you. You know, it's another comic that you need mushrooms or LSD when you sit and read it.
You love your sort of psychedelic dreamscape-like books, don't you?
I do, and I particularly love this one. There you go. How's that for a segue? Thank you. This is the third issue. It looks a bit like a sort of scrolling video game. I don't understand video games, but you know those ones where they run along and jump over things and they drop down again. And you know, is that platformers?
Platformers.
That's it. Yeah. It looks a bit like a sort of psychedelic version of that. Really gorgeous stuff. It's by Bob Turner, who we love, and this is the third volume which he sent me. I was thinking, what am I going to talk about this week? And then this dropped into my Dropbox, and it is absolutely gorgeous. I've loved the last two issues. It's got a real sense of sort of grid. It sort of literally throws itself all over the page, and has just an amazing sort of layout to it. But it's got a bit of a creepy quality to it. And there's been this chase between this central character, who's like this triangular character with a big old eyeball for a head, and the character of Death. If you recall, Bob did us a Death Holding the Awesome Comics podcast banner. Do you remember? Way back when we started. And he also took part in the games we ran. Weird landscape, strange creatures. It's pretty much unlike anything else you're going to see out there. At one point in it, my favourite page is where the sort of stars and planets align, and you begin to feel the sort of astral sort of pull on you and on the character in it, and the world turns upside down and closes in on itself, and then you begin to wonder what's happened in the end there. Has he finally reached his end? And you'll find out where it goes. But really great stuff as always. A book about adventure, exploration, strong psychedelics, and discovering how a good comic should flow, really. The action, it really, really does flow. If you go to castlerockcomic.bigcartel.com, you can get yourself a copy. It's coming out in a couple of weeks. If you go to Castle Rock Comic on Twitter, you'll find it as well. Great stuff. Really good stuff.
Awesome. Okay. What have you got, Dan?
Well, this one ties in because this was also in an episode of the Awesome Games, the Penguins.
Oh, I think they're mates. This is Alan Henderson, isn't it?
Yeah. So the Sunday postings, Alan was kind enough to send this in. He says, "You want puns? Alan has puns for you." The Sunday postings, the supplement to the other Penguin books, it's going to be launched in the MCM Scotland, 24th September, and it'll be on sale for £2.50. It's a nice simple kind of read, like similar like Calvin and Hobbes. You kind of dip into it. You can read one or two on the fly, and it's great, really funny. There's a great strip where the Penguins are doing a Celebrity Squares episode, and there's the Pingu's there, one from the Penguin from Happy Feet, Wheezy from Toy Story's in it, and the strip ends when they get a copyright infringement notice from the various creators, and they've got to bring their lawyer. So it's really good, definitely one to pick up. And yes. You can check out the Penguins at penguins.tumblr.com, and Alan's on Twitter at shadow1974. Check it out.
It's a sort of book you can leave in the loo, isn't it? It's like exactly. That sort of funny little
that's high praise
script. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely.
High praise.
Yeah.
I know what you mean though.
Do you have comics in your toilet?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
God, yeah.
It's not always... actually in the toilet. No.
You can find them amongst the pornography in my toilet.
There's always a Viz annual in the toilet in my house. Yeah,
classic.
And there's always a Vaz annual in Tony's toilet.
Oh, Viz have got to be all over him, haven't they? God, them and Private Eye have got to be.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Oh, dear. That's a brilliant choice, Dan.
Thank you.
My recommendation, folks, this week is a comic that's been on the scene for a few years. They've got 7 issues out so far. The 8th one is going to be out soon. It's the guys from Attic Studios and their long-running series, Loose Scannon. I picked up issues 6 and 7 at Melksham. Dan Harris, Jim Bamfield and Chris Carter churning out this sci-fi action comedy epic, which... it's just hilarious stuff. And because they've had so many issues, you know, I know whenever I see them, I can pick up an issue every time I see them. You know, they don't do the hard sell either. You know, they're very appreciative. You know, they're great guys. Lou Scannon, it took me a long time to realise that Lou Scannon was actually Loose Cannon.
Loose Cannon.
Yeah, it took me ages to figure that out. And as soon as I did, it blew my mind. That makes me seem really stupid. But that's the kind of person I am. Basically, this is...
We're not proud, are we?
Yeah.
We don't care what people think of
us. If you like things like Red Dwarf and that sort of sci-fi comedy, you know, this is definitely told by guys that have
They're big Red Dwarf fans, aren't they, I think?
Yeah, yeah. There's great sort of sense of humour. There's action. You know, there is a story underneath it all. It's not just empty jokes. But they do love, like, a play on words. I love a play on words, mate.
You do, yeah.
For instance... Like one issue there, they're pursuing someone called Bart Ender. Get it? Bartender.
Thanks.
And their spaceship is called the Raging Hormone, which is funny in itself. I mean, the cast are, you know, a crew, whether it's been cybernetics or strange aliens, there's always a lot of humour running through it and lots of different adventures. They did the first few issues, they were different stories, but I think between issues 4 to 6, it was actually sort of it was their first attempt at an ongoing sort of tale, which comes out quite nicely. And it's worth recommending this series just for the sound effects alone. There's a lot of action, so there's a lot of like lettering going on. But on issue 6, there's an explosion and they actually use the sound effect fuck a boom, which is amazing, which says it all. You know, it's a comic that you can read and laugh out loud, and the amount of laughs you have per issue are quite high. So, and it's a great sort of small press sort of individual character. Do you know what I mean? He's definitely a character that stands on his own. So, you check out atticstudios.website for all of their stuff, whether it be Bruce Outback or Loose Scannon is where it all started, and they've got lots of cool stuff on that website. But I thought it was about time. It was beyond time that we gave that series a shout out, because I know they've been, you know, there are quite a lot of shows. And
yeah, hardworking guys, aren't they?
Yeah, good and you, guys. See their you see their table, and you know, there's loads of issues there. You know, you're spoilt for choice. So definitely check them out.
Cool,
Kevin. What would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners?
I suppose the one thing I would like to recommend, which I read quite recently, is Bloodfellas by
Jessica. That sounds more cozier, isn't it?
Yeah, and kind of Mick Trimble. It came out last year, but I've only just got round to kind of reading it in the last few weeks. And it's like a zombie noir story, gangster story, which has got like four different parts to the story, each told from kind of like a different perspective. It jumps around a bit with kind of like the time and, you know, how it all ties together. But at the end of the day, it's, yeah, it's a really satisfying read. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
And cool. Also, Bloodfellas is like Goodfellas. I love a play on words.
Yes, yeah, it is. I must admit, that hadn't occurred to me.
Ah! Finally, I can teach someone else.
Yeah. I think he's being nice to you, but that's okay. I'll let it go. Yeah.
Look, I'll take pity. I'm not ashamed. Yeah. So yeah, that sounds cool. I love that sort of like twist on. Is it modern day or is it set in the past?
No, it's very much a sort of like 1920s, 1930s sort of environment.
The Prohibition kind of era.
Yeah. Yeah, very much. In fact, you see what it's about is that there's this drug going around, which is called. Off the top of my head, I think it's called Ascension, and basically it's taken from souls and it allows the person who actually takes this drug to briefly go up and kind of glimpse heaven and allows some people to actually converse, you know, with the dead just for kind of a very short period of time, and it's all about that. So in a way this drug has taken the place of alcohol. Wow. And it's like zombie kind of like gang lords or gangsters that kind of run the trade in this, and it's about, you know, where they come from, and it's about a love story as well. There's a lot of stuff going on there, but as I say, it all ties together really well at the end. So, and I thoroughly recommend it. Yeah,
nice,
very good,
brilliant.
That sounds good.
Yeah,
brilliant. You've been spoiled for choice this week, folks. The amount of books that I've got to put in the show notes, yeah. But they're all amazing. So definitely check it out. And let us know if you want us to check out any other books or what you thought of this show or what you thought of our guest who put up with us rambling about the today's politics or Steven Seagal and how patient he is for sticking with us.
cheers, Kev.
There's several different ways you can get in touch with us. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If you've got any events that we may not know about, there seems to be lots of events just sort of popping up everywhere that, you know.
Yeah, there does, doesn't there?
Yeah, yeah. And we can't know about everything. So if there's a show in Dublin or, you know, anywhere, you know, Glasgow, anywhere in Europe, let us know. Or further afield, we've talked about NYCC, which I'm very jealous that Tony's going to. Yeah. You can email us tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. You can get in touch with Mark Miller and tell him to get in touch with us.
Yeah.
at Mark Miller?
Yeah, yeah.
Even if we get, maybe tweet him saying, have you heard of Miller Watch?
Yeah.
And if he responded to that.
Yeah. I think that'd be nice.
Something.
Yeah. Don't write it on a rock and throw it through his window.
Yeah,
though.
Exactly.
Don't do that.
If you listen to the last episode, you'll know that we actually like Mark Miller.
We love it. We're big
fans of Mark Miller. So... You know.
He's just breaking our heart daily, isn't he? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The longer this goes on, Mark, the longer you ignore us.
Yeah.
You know, we know you know about us.
Come on, Mark.
Every day I draw around my private parts and I post them to you.
You know, if you ever get that feeling where you drink too much coffee or tea and you get an impending sense of doom from having too much caffeine, I imagine he feels the same way about us.
Yeah.
He doesn't know about us, but there's like a dread.
One day I'll wake up and I'll be spooning him. You know.
Dan, do you literally get an impending sense of doom when you've had too much caffeine?
Don't drink coffee.
Google it, that's a fact. If you have too much coffee.
No, it's a fact. An impending sense of doom is a fact.
If you drink too much caffeine, if you have too much caffeine, you can get an impending sense of doom.
I can imagine doctors just sort of saying, "I don't have any, don't have too much coffee, Mr. Hunt. What's that? You'll suffer from an impending sense of doom.
Doom upon you.
You get like heightened anxiety, and it can bring about an impending sense of doom.
Maybe
check it out.
Stop drinking coffee because there's a lot of anxiety flying about in there.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Maybe we should just stop drinking it.
Yeah, Dan, don't drink any caffeine. I can't bear thinking about you feeling.
Dan
like that.
Decaf Butcher.
Decaf Butcher. Yeah.
Hey.
I can't go without coffee.
I can't either. Same. Yeah.
You are masochists.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when do you ever get asked, oh, how much coffee or tea you had today? And then I always have to play it down because I thought they're not going to like this answer. It feels a bit like alcohol.
Yeah.
Although, do you just constantly walk around with an impending sense of doom then?
If I haven't got that, I haven't had enough tea or coffee, obviously.
Yeah. Kev's getting it around about now.
Yeah. And I never get it from coffee.
Just from the Awesome Comics pod.
There's several different ways you can follow us and also get an impending sense of doom. You can follow us on Twitter at The Awesome Pod. Like us on Facebook and get in touch and get involved, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Thank you for listening to us and getting an impending sense of doom.
Sexy doom.
Oh, Victor Von Doom. Oh, lovely. Yeah. Thank you for listening to us on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, go on, leave us a review. We might do something nice for you.
Please.
Tony will.
I will. I'll do something very nice or a little bit dirty.
Oh, there you go. Dan will do something nice, won't you, Dan?
Yeah, why not?
He'll beat you to death at lunchtime with dead too much coffee.
Is your local Costa afraid of you, Dan?
Yeah. Extra short. Fucking no way.
I wouldn't know. I'm not allowed in there anymore.
Oh, dear. But you're always allowed back here, Dan. You're always welcome back.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. Thank you for listening, whether it was on the Stitcher Network or the Podnose Network. We love you all, no matter where you listen to us. Where can people find us online, etc.? Mr. Esmond.
Ezohyz, or at downthetubes.net. We've got a few things coming up. I'm just going to hint. I'm just going to say Bart Sears, Ron Mars, Tom Rainey. That's a little bit of a hint. What some things we might have coming up that we've just been told about. So very exciting news for us. I'm just looking at some stuff now and it looks gorgeous. So something we'll probably talk about in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, bear that in mind.
Yeah,
there you go.
It's going to be an exciting few weeks.
Yeah, it's getting real.
Yeah.
Get him his coffee. Where can people find you online, Dan?
It's on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com, which you should.
You should.
He's on fire. Yeah. Our boy's on fire, as always.
Thank you.
You can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. don't put me off during my... What? Everyone else gets their moment. you can follow me online at Jester Diablo. You can find out more about my comic, The Red Mask, at theredmaskfrommars.com. And Kevin, where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter at Kevin Gunstone. And I'm also on Facebook as well. And also we've got Planet of Demons page on there as well. So please feel free to drop by and like it.
Yes. When you look at it, you'll like it. We liked it.
Yeah.
We've got the best taste ever. There you go.
Yeah. Good. Apart from that one email we got.
Who cares? We'll send Dan round. We'll starve him of caffeine and then send him around.
Yeah. Right. He's laughing at something I've just sent him. I've typed.
We'll talk about this off air. Right. thanks for listening, folks. And from Kevin, Dan, Tony, the troublemaker, and myself, have an amazing week. Read loads of comics, and as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
Okay, bye.
What would Seagal's biography be called?
Oh, interesting.
Oh,
because what are we calling yours, Dan? We're calling it Boy Done Good, aren't we?
What about Marked for Reading, as in a plan for Marked for Death?
I might, yeah.
Dear God.
What about Marked for Rock Tram?